You're tuned to WVBR FM Ithaca.
The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and not necessarily those of WVBR or its management. This is Where Did the Road Go? Our aim is to explore the fringe, to be true skeptics and question openly, to investigate the paranormal, bring light to the dark corners of history, and give a voice to the shunned of science. We deal in mystery and the important questions that these subjects bring to light. What is reality? Who are we? And why are we here? Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com for a full show archive, links to all our social media, upcoming schedule, and much, much more. Now, join your host Soraya on this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
And welcome to tonight's show. A couple things I want to talk about real quick before we get into tonight's interview. First of all, this show has grown exponentially since it started, and I couldn't be happier with that. And I want to thank everyone out there listening, everyone who has rated stuff on iTunes or on the website, everyone who has written me, left comments on YouTube videos, and so on and so forth, because I really, really appreciate it. I had no idea this show would take off the way it did. We're only about a little over two years in, and It's just fantastic to see the feedback and the response from everyone. So thank you so much for listening. And I hope to be able to continue this for a very long time. Secondly, starting next week, I should have an occasional co-host, an anthropology student named Luke St. Clair. He has been on the show before briefly with Lorna Reynolds in the Ghost Hunters of the Finger Lakes. He didn't talk a lot. He's probably not going to talk a lot as a co-host, but he's going to be here to add a little bit to the show, hopefully on a fairly regular basis. We'll see how that goes. And that will start as again next week, and that'll be the interview along with Mike Cleland and Aaron Gullius. Part three of our discussion on the history of UFOs, trying to strip it down and look at it in different ways, and I believe we're starting with 1980-ish. Time period next week. All right. So for this week, I have Chad and Alta Dillard. And they are a couple of people who have had some very strange experiences. They approach them very open-mindedly, which is something I've found to be very refreshing. They don't try to define what happened to them as much as just tell the story of what happened to them. So, take it as you will. I find their story rather compelling. It's definitely interesting. And we will be doing, this will be part one of two. We will be doing part two in about a month because there was just too much going on. This takes care of of who they are and their first really major experience. And when we come back in a month with part two, they'll get into some of the even stranger stuff that has happened to them since. So, that's that. Here's the interview with Chad and Alta Dillard. All right, so Chad and Alta, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Now, you are currently traveling the country.
We are. We're traveling literally throughout for the rest of the year.
Right.
We started our venture about a month ago.
Okay. And what do you do on weekends?
We do, we consider ourselves artists of a sort. We create a wearable art that is, I'm originally from a reservation in Arizona of mixed native blood, and we decided to take a format of part of my regalia. It's a shawl, an honor shawl, and we create them. We're the only ones in the country doing it outside of the native world, and we've opened it up to other cultures. We use the format of a Native American shawl, but we have started creating them in all kinds of fabrics and design and what have you. And as I said, we're the only ones doing it. And a lot of these shows are very happy to have us because we're unusual. We're called Unique Rabbit Shawls. And I think we are really quite unique.
All right. Okay. And we'll post.
No rabbits noosed in the making of our work. No critters.
Ah, okay. I'll post links for that stuff for people, too, if they want to check it out. But we're, the main reason we have you on is you've had some very unusual experiences in your lives. When did all this start?
Well, Chad's kind of guiding for me to start it off. I'm 10 years older than Chad, and I preface that because I'm born in 1957, as I said, on a reservation in Arizona of mixed Native blood, and I have a pretty mysterious past, and a lot of the questions in my past life I can't get answered because I was raised primarily by a mom who left the reservation area when I was 6 months old, and she traveled the country, and there were a lot of, as I said, a lot of mystery in my early childhood. One of those mysteries is that I don't have any childhood memories until I'm about 9 or 10. I have no memory prior to that at all. And my first memory is very acute. And as I've said in the past, it's not like it seems like one day I just woke up at around 9 years old. And in that experience, I'm in a military hospital in Aurora, Colorado, where we lived at the time. My mom and myself and my stepfather. My stepfather was not in the military. I don't seem to have a military background in the family. But yet I was in a hospital called Fitzsimmons Hospital. And I was being tested for what was commonly called ESP. And that's literally my first memory of sitting in a hospital room with people around me in long white lab coats testing me for, as they called it, ESP.
Oh, so as far as you know, this stuff has been happening to you all your life.
I suspect it has been. My mom, just to add to that kind of quickly, my mom, who passed in 1997, so I don't have her physically, you know, to speak to any longer, to ask any of these questions, but she would say to the few people that she trusted, and it was very few, throughout my life, that when I was about 6 months old, so this would have made it somewhere between 57 and 58, she claims that she was driving across the desert, and I don't know what desert she's speaking about, because I never questioned her. I never challenged anything she said, nor did the people she ever told this to. So a lot of this is just an open-ended mystery for me, but she claimed that while she was driving, I was the only passenger in the car with her, and as I said, I was 6 months old. She says that it was daylight and that sometimes she would use the word UFO, sometimes she would say a small metallic craft, she claims, came down out of the sky and literally stopped her on the highway from driving. Now, that's about as far as she ever got with that story. I don't ever remember anybody ever asking her. It was more, you know, their mouths hanging open with what strangeness she was saying to them. And it was something I felt very embarrassed about for whatever reason. I have no idea, but I felt extremely embarrassed when she would bring that up. So I didn't want to know, and I never questioned her. But apparently it has been going on all my life.
Okay. Now, did this intensify when you met Chad?
It absolutely did. Absolutely. I don't remember ever having any interest whatsoever in anything in space. I had no, other than the beauty of the stars, I just literally had no interest in any of this arena whatsoever. I wasn't even interested in science fiction movies. So it wasn't something that I ever, you know, delved into or what have you. And in 1990, while living in Little Rock, Arkansas, this is where my mom had relocated herself and had created quite a life for herself. She'd gone to college there and so on. 1990, I was 33 years old, never married, nor had I had children, nor did I have any interest in either. I wasn't interested in marriage nor having children of my own. But there's no doubt to me whatsoever that an unseen force, I feel this union that I'm in with Chad was arranged by, I always say by them. Them is the unseen force, this hidden hand, if you will, seemed to bring Chad and I together in 1990. And so it absolutely began to amp up when I was arranged with Chad in 1990.
Now, how did they arrange it, per se?
Well, it was Valentine's Day, and, you know, without sounding as if, I never want to come across as if I don't love Chad or care about Chad deeply, because I do with all my soul and all my being, but it's as if these beings that appeared in the form of humans made sure that Chad and I met on Valentine's Day 1990. And, you know, there's quite a bit to that story, but I'll preface it with saying that not only am I convinced that these beings that appeared in human form brought Chad and I together, but within 24 hours of us meeting, we discovered that Chad's grandfather, who had passed on before I came into the picture, he was fairly responsible for raising Chad throughout his early life, him and his younger brother. So Chad very close to this man, but he knew this man as George. The world knew him as George or Papaw. And come to find out, this grandfather and I share the same identical name, as in his first name that's on his tombstone is Alta, same as mine. And that's just too bizarre for words for me. And also his last name is Duncan, and that happens to be my mom's name. So as I've said in the past, here I am, mixed Indian from a reservation in Arizona, with this strange name, Alta. I moved to the South. I meet Chad, and we find out that his grandfather and I share this identical name. So it goes beyond coincidence. I've never been a coincidence kind of person, and it goes way beyond all of that. And to this day, we still can't find out. We've never been able to find out how his grandfather ended up with this name of Alta. You know, there's no legacy there whatsoever. That's just that's as much of a mystery as my childhood.
Huh. Now, what about Chad? Did Chad have an unusual experiences growing up as well?
Well, I had a few. My dad was a farmer in Arkansas back in the early 60s, 70s. I remember one time we had a soybean field at the time out beside our house. And I remember my dad, my uncle, and my grandfather talking about these three burnt circles. They were perfect circles, probably 12, 15 feet in diameter, just kind of boom, 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 right in a row. And they were right outside between our house and our little shop that they had for the tractors and all. No explanation, nobody knew where they came from, nobody saw anything or anything like that. But that was kind of weird. I remember now, I wasn't with my dad at the time. I was then, most of the school time year with my mom, and then summer times with my dad after they split up. And I remember my dad telling me that they'd come home, my dad and my stepmother came home, and the whole house was rearranged. The furniture, everything in the cabinets. I mean, the whole house was just redecorated,
Wow.
I wasn't around at that time, but, little things like that, not as dramatic as Alta, but, I did have a few.
Okay, so after you two met, what started happening then?
Well, so this arrangement, as I said, I've always called us an arranged union in 1990, will move us forward now to 1995. Chad and I have relocated to Louisiana, and we were living in a small community just outside of a university town, about an hour or so out of New Orleans, called Hammond, Louisiana. And please keep in mind, again, I've never had any interest in UFOs or anything of that nature. Chad saying the same thing. Right?
Yeah, not really any sci-fi or, we weren't, searching for, UFOs or anything like that.
And so one evening in 1995, after we had just moved to this area, Chad had asked me out for dinner after work one night. And so we were driving. It was still light out. It was before dark. We were just going to go out and have dinner and drinks and just a nice evening out. I'll have Chad pick it up from there, what happened to us.
We were driving. I'm driving out to the passenger seat. And right around this kind of bend in the road in this group of trees was the local Walmart shopping center.
The super-sized Walmart.
Super-sized Walmart shopping center. And when we get around this group of trees, Alex and I kind of look up in the air, in the sky, and on the passenger side of the road, I would say below cloud level is this huge, huge craft. And
like a floating city.
Yeah,
massive.
Huge, battleship size, mothership size. It was very flat on the bottom, kind of a obelisk shape, a rectangle, but not as wide in the front as it was in the back.
I think he's meaning to say like more like a triopolis,
yeah,
or
that's
something of that nature.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
It's totally black, totally real dark.
No sound,
moving very slow.
Almost like not moving at all.
Two or three lights in the front, three or four in the back. She looks back at me, I look at her. And as if to say, without saying a word to each other, we were like, okay, focus back on the road. If we don't see it, it won't see us, and, we'll just keep on going. We went on to dinner that night. I don't remember speaking about it, never spoke about it, the next morning. I do remember either something in the local newspaper or radio or something like that.
What he's saying is others had seen it and reported it.
Right.
Right.
During the experience, I didn't see anybody running off the road or stopping their cars or panicking or anything like that. But, apparently there was sightings of this craft.
And people have really questioned us over our reaction that, there's no book of rules in this, we've discovered. And in all honesty, I went into complete shock. That's the only explanation I have, because my head jerked away so fast. I turned my head away from it instantly. And I stared at Chad, like begging Chad silently to tell me that that was not there. And we literally, as Chad said, made up our minds. It was a non-event. It didn't happen. And yet,
right. We
weren't allowed to escape that because others had seen and reported it. But even after we heard about others seeing it, we still refused to speak of it. We never even spoke about it.
And that's not a totally unusual response to something like that either.
Thank you for saying that, because most people just think that's just the strangest thing of our reaction. And yet, it was our reaction. It was a non-event to us.
as you said, it wasn't something you were interested in. I could see it being an odd reaction if you were really interested in UFOs. But that not being a part of your reality, to see something like that, to just kind of try to block it out of your reality is not an unusual reaction whatsoever.
Thank you for that.
And, you know, this was before cell phones and, you know, cameras, you know, is easily, you know, accessible and all that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we had an astrophysicist ask us on it during an interview, you know, why we didn't get pictures, kind of language, rather than hearing us stating the fact that it was as if we were in shock, total shock.
Right, right. And in 1995, too, it's not like cameras are like they are today, and people don't always understand that. I mean, nowadays, everything has a camera on it. But in 1995, you had to have a camera to, you know, be able to take a picture.
That's right. Not handy as we were going out just to have dinner and drinks that night. Nope. That was essentially the beginning for us to realize that what I suspected from 1990 started feeling like it was more real than I wanted to admit to.
Okay. All right. And this led up to something in the French Quarter in New Orleans.
Right. So it wasn't long after this, this event, then Chad and I then moved to the French Quarter. And this would have been now in 95, later on in that year. And then it took from 95 until 1997. As we were living and working in the French Quarter and doing quite well for ourselves and making a good name for ourselves and just really enjoying life, we'd had a lot of, I refer to all of this, and I always have, as high strangeness. I call every bit of this, I don't use the word aliens or abducted or any of this language. I've always just referred to everything paranormal as high strangeness.
Okay.
So, from 95 until 97, the high strangeness was amping up, really amping up. French Quarter is a bizarre place anyway. I call it a mystical madness living there. It's quite amazing, and it takes a certain caliber of person, I feel, that, you know, can navigate that kind of environment with voodoo, hoodoo, she-do, don't-do, ghosties. Right? You know, just all the things that you hear about or you read about or you see, this was happening to us in those forms. Lots of ghost experiences, time slips. I had personally at least during the experience, there was a female that presented herself to me that she didn't call herself the Virgin Mary, nor do I even to this day, but it seemed as if I was having one of those kinds of encounters with a veiled woman. And again, just lots of high strangeness taking place, really amping up from 95 to 97.
I think high strangeness is a good way of putting it, because it's not just one type of thing from the sounds of it. It was different types of things. You know, if you were just seeing ghosts, then it's not necessarily high strangeness, but having a number of different things happen to you, I think, qualifies as high strangeness experiences.
Right. We were certainly having, you know, in all the various forms, these kinds of experiences. So it seems like the apt title to me. I don't know what else to call any of it.
Right. And I think it's good that you're not trying to fit it into pigeonhole it into a specific dogma either.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah, I've refused to do that from the beginning. You know, we've had everyone else suggest to us what it is, but we don't, or I don't in particular. Now, Chad and I are very different, and I'm grateful for that, about our experiences. But I personally, I see the trickster element in all of this, and oftentimes I question everything.
And that's the best way to be, I think.
It's been working so far. You know, other than the folks that are very dogmatic about it being aliens and abduction and ghosts and, you know, this and that, so far it's worked well for me to not think in terms of anything other than it's all high strangeness and as I said, a trickster element.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so now you met this woman, Jacqueline, as well.
Right. Now, Jacqueline is, we have her account in writing, but she has chosen, maybe very wisely, to never go public herself. But she knew that Chad and I were going to be public about this and that at some point we intended to try to write. We never intended to write a book, as everybody seems to write books, but we finally were guided a couple years ago to, we're in the process of trying to get this recorded, you know, for posterity, if nothing else, for Chad and I. But Jacqueline
right.
has just always chose to let us do the talking about it, and she's felt that, you know, we've handled this well, and she just has, she went on to have a, and has created a great life for herself, so she has stayed, you know, publicly silent, but certainly not without giving us permission, if you will, to speak on her behalf. And she came into our lives, I was working in a real exclusive salon in the French Quarter, and she had been hired as one of our managers for the shop, and she was at the time, just to give you an idea of age range, she was 24, never married, no children. Chad was 30, and I had just turned 40. And the moment that Jacqueline and I met in the shop, it was like old home week. It certainly was that way for me. I felt that I was meeting a familiar. It was love at first sight. And she's a very joyous soul. She's very straightforward, no BS kind of person. You know, she has a joyous laugh, and she has a wonderful sense of humor, but she's certainly nobody that I would ever challenge. You know, if she says something, I always took it to the bank. And even at 24, she was old, way beyond her years. But again, a very joyous soul, tall, slender, long blonde hair. There's a reason for us giving this description. And as I said, from the moment we first met, it was just, it was like finding family. It felt like family for me. And then when she met Chad, he was like a brother to her. You know, it was just, it all worked. The three of us just worked well with each other as friends. And on this particular evening, she had asked if I wanted to go out and, you know, party in the French Quarter and have dinner and drinks again. I think it's that dinner and drinks thing that came to get Chad and I when I'm thinking about it. So we happened to live only a couple blocks. Chad and I had a townhouse just a couple of blocks from the salon. So I told Jacqueline, let's call Chad. I know he'll want to come join. He always liked playing with the girls, and she's a cutie patootie. So he, you know, he just walked over a couple of blocks and joined us at the shop. That evening, as she was, you know, doing her duties, closing the shop up, we were just going to leave from the shop on foot and make a night of it across the French Quarter. I'd like to also mention, before I forget, Jacqueline didn't live in the French Quarter at the time. She lived across the river. And for folks who lived on the other side of the river, they either took the ferry back and forth if they worked in the quarter, or they drove. She did both. She had a car, and on this particular day, most of the time she used the ferry, but on this particular day, she happened to drive to work that morning, or that late, that afternoon, and she parked her car just up the street from our stop, which is important to remember down the line in this story. So, as I said, we were going to do this night all on foot, and we were just going to start from one end of the French Quarter and work our way across, and it's probably about 23 blocks square, I think, something of that nature. And from the moment we stepped outside of the shop, I very clearly remember it feeling weird to me. And it's hard to describe what feeling weird means, but I clearly could feel the vibration was off, the energy was strange. It just
that,
felt
that
weird.
That Twilight Zone sort of feeling?
Thank you. You just took the words right out of my little brain. That's exactly how I've described it. I felt like I had stepped into the Twilight Zone. And so as we started our evening, we discovered very quickly, the three of us, that we were in the Twilight Zone, because the French Quarter is a, I don't know if you've ever been there or not, but it's a 24/7 party. It never sleeps. You know, it's nonstop. And even in when it's slow months for the tourism, it's still always busy. But not this night. Again, the Twilight Zone, there were very few people. We started off on the famous Bourbon Street, walking down Bourbon Street. There weren't people. And there were two travelers. The three of us were looking at each other and what's going on? Where is everybody? And so in a short amount of time, we discovered as we made that 23 blocks, we were clearly experiencing something we couldn't explain, because there just weren't any people. None of the clubs had any work staff in them. You know, if it had a restaurant, there was no wait staff. If it had a bar, they had maybe a bartender, but there were no patrons. In any of the locations that we stopped at, we never stayed at any of them. We didn't drink alcohol, nor did we take drugs, nor was there anybody around to drug us, you know, which would have been helpful maybe to explain some of this down the road, but
right.
There wasn't even anybody around to drug us. So, you know, we didn't even have that as an excuse. We just literally found ourselves stopping at three different locations that we were very familiar with, and the minute we'd get, you know, inside the door, we would see there wasn't a, you know, it was the same story each place we stopped. So,
and how long did this last for?
You know, a whole hour. We were out there an hour. It took us about an hour. Is that right, Chet? We started around 9:30, and the last thing the three of us seemed to collectively remember, and as I said, we have it in Jacqueline's writing. She seems to remember, as Chad and I do, around 11 o'clock. And that's the last thing the three of us remember. So about an hour or an hour and a half.
Okay. All right. Now, you all had different experiences in this time period as well, right?
We did. If I may, we'll, you know, however you'd like us to explain this to you, I'm the only one that seems to have come back, if you will, from whatever this experience was, with what I call memory, and it's very strong, again, acute memory of what I call the in-between experience. I have no memory whatsoever, not even to this day, of coming off that street corner, nor do I have any memory whatsoever of being returned home the next day. But literally, one minute I'm on the street corner around 11 o'clock at night telling Chad, I'm so bored, I just want to go home. And then the next thing I know, I'm sitting straight up in my living room. On my daybed, I had a brass daybed in the living room, and I was sitting Indian style like I'm doing right now when I'm, you know, when I'm by myself. And that's how I came to. I didn't wake up. I came to. My eyes popped open, and I was sitting straight up, and I looked around, and I was in my home, and it was the next day. And I'm flipping out, is putting it mildly. I'm rubbing my arms, and I can feel something in my upper arm that wasn't there the night before. And while I'm, you know, having this kind of experiences and I'm flipping out inside, I'm mortified, because where's Chad and where's Jacqueline is all I could think of, is where are they? And thank goodness, you know, Chad then finally woke up about an hour after I came to in our bed, thank goodness, and the Jacqueline was still missing. We have no account for Jacqueline at all. And it took a couple of days before we did have contact with Jacqueline. So Chad and I went through unbelievable panic, fear.
I'm sure.
Can't even begin to describe to you what we were experiencing over where is Jacqueline. And so if you'd like, now we've had regression done. I've tried, and I've paid a lot of money to be regressed by, you know, a world-renowned regressionist, if you will, and it and it failed miserably for me. So I've never been able to be regressed. All I have is that memory of the in-between experience. But Chad has had regression, and he has a full-blown account of what he feels happened to him, and possibly Jacqueline. But keep this in mind, I'm not involved in his experience at all. And in my memory of that night, Jacqueline and Chad are not involved in my experience.
So, okay. Well, do you want to start with what you remembered about your experience?
So in my case, as I said, 1 minute I'm on a street corner saying, I just want to go home. And the next thing I know, I'm standing on the edge of a crater. And I'm literally on the edge of a crater, looking down in a crater. And the coloring around me was like being in a black and white movie. It was all gray and black and white and blonde. That's the only color involved in that experience. When I'm looking down in that crater, I see a metallic structure that I'm not sure if it was a building or a craft. I thought at the time that it was a large warehouse, like a big metallic warehouse. I didn't see any movement down in this crater at all, like anybody moving about. Everything was stationary. There were lights around the perimeter of this crater that were orbs of light that made very well, it feels to me like those lights were intelligent. Then I remember kind of pivoting, not completely turning around, but sort of looking over my shoulder and a bit turned, and there were what appeared to be humans behind me, a few feet behind me, but they were stacked on top of each other, of different ages, all dressed, and again, look like humans, you know, off of Earth.
Right.
They seemed to be in suspended animation. Nobody looked upset, distressed. I didn't study it long, but, you know, that is the memory. Then, before I could turn around, turned back forward again, facing this crater, down into this crater. All of a sudden, without any warning, there is what appears to be a woman standing right next to me. And she's so close that we're touching, side by side. I have to look up at her. She's very tall, well over 6 feet tall. I'm about 5'5". But my head had to crank back to look up at her. She's absolutely, I've had the most difficult time ever finding words describing her. She is so physically beautiful to me that those words don't really even apply. I was just beyond myself in amazement at how beautiful this woman was. She was had long blonde hair. She was perfectly proportioned, wearing a bodysuit, you know, that fit her perfect. And I just know that I was in a state of ecstasy. I've said this before. If I had been a puppy, my tail was wagging. I was so, yeah, you know, I was childlike joy, like just glee. I was in such a state of ecstasy. I didn't care where I was. I didn't think anything about Chad or Jacqueline or anything. I just was so joyous to be with her. I never had any other thought other than just how happy I am. I was just that happy. I'd never experienced anything like that. Then I remember looking up above us into the sky. It's a black sky with what appear to be lots of beautiful stars. Very bright white lights, and that was joyous. And as I'm studying these stars with her, you know, my world's complete. The next thing I know, one of those stars began to move, and when that began to happen, I went from this state of ecstasy to a state of terror just that fast. My heart started racing like it was going to beat out of my chest. I became that afraid. other stars joined in, or these other lights joined in the movement, and as they're moving across the sky back and forth, like doing a dance, I remember her speaking to me telepathically with a melodic voice that I'll never be able to duplicate. She called me by name, and she said in the most amazing voice, she said, "Alta, don't be afraid. They're just scanning you." And then with that, now again, I'm in a state of terror as she, what I think, is trying to calm me. And as I said, with that, then the next thing I know, I'm sitting straight up the next day in the living room, rubbing my arm with something protruding out of the top of my, you know, my left upper arm. And I had very strange handprints around both my arms as well.
And they only had 4 digits on them?
That's right. Yeah. They were, I was in so much trauma when my eyes popped open, because again, I'm going through unbelievable hell, trying to adjust with what that memory was. Where's Chad? Where's Jacqueline? And I got something now in my upper arm. This is all happening at one time, you know, at the same time. So I didn't even realize I had these bruises on my arms. It wasn't until Chad woke up about an hour or so afterwards that as he walked around me, he saw these bruises, and as he can describe.
Yeah, they were 4 digits, very long, and again, went all the way around her upper arm.
Both arms. They looked both like arms. I had been held or grabbed from the back, which is why I didn't see them at, you know, at first, because I was too busy dealing with the front of me.
Okay. And now that you remembered without any hypnosis.
Right. Right. Yeah, I had when I went to have regression done, that never happened. The regression never took place, but high strangeness beyond words took place. So
like what?
Something clearly was interfering with that, whether it be my own psyche or what, but I had a very bizarre encounter, you know, of a nature that I clearly remember that had nothing to do with regression, because I tried very hard to be regressed and it wasn't going to happen.
Huh. Okay. And what was Chad's experience from that night?
Well, you know, like Alta said, the last thing I remember is, I would say, 11 o'clock. Next memory in my regression, what comes out in my regression is we're standing on that street corner. Again, it's about 11 o'clock. I noticed this bright light coming from around the corner where we were standing. And I get the girl's attention, and we walk around this corner, and I would say about halfway down the block, this orb of light, and this orb was probably about 12 foot in diameter, probably about 15 foot off the ground, and yeah, off the street. It was very bright, white, crisp, clean light, just beautiful light. And all of a sudden, it just kind of comes at us and engulfs us, brings us into it. My next memory is I'm walking down this hallway. It's kind of gently kind of turning to the right. I'm following this little being. He's probably about 3 foot tall, big, kind of a pale gray skin tone, bulbous head. He was wearing a kind of a skin tight one piece jumpsuit. He had substance to him. He wasn't like the grays that you see on TV, the little skinny things. He had substance to him. He kind of waddled when he walked. He was kind of dwarfish. To my left, I could see, or preferably, I could see a tall blonde female walking beside me. This does describe our friend Jacqueline, but, you know, I didn't turn to see if it was. The walls were very, very smooth, you know, to the looking at them. You know, there weren't any bolts or, you know, rivets or anything like that, no seams, you know, very, very smooth. My next memory is I'm in this room, and this room seems infinite. It's just, it was very dark. I could not see any walls or anything. The only thing I really could see is off to my left again, where was this tall blonde female laying on an examining table. She was nude, but she was censored like they do on TV, you know, when they don't want you to see someone's face or body part or whatever. She was censored from head to toe. You know, I couldn't tell who it was. I didn't see body parts or anything like that. There were three beings around her, one on each side and one like behind her head. They were very buggish or praying mantis-y looking. They were about 8-9 foot tall. You know, their mouths were down closer to their chin. Their eyes, big, you know, insect-looking eyes. Their arms were kind of, you know, crooked or, you know, like a praying mantis would be, you know, almost.
Right.
They were wearing these cloaks, these black cloaks, almost like you'd see like a Jesuit priest or a Grim Reaper without the hood, you know. She never seemed to be in distress or pain or anything like that. She almost like she was, like Aldo said, suspended animation or unconscious. I focused my attention back to my immediate. I could see, you know, like around her, and I could see like around my immediate, you know, and everything else was just pitch black. I focused my attention back to my immediate. I'm sitting in this chair, and it's almost like a dentist chair, but much more comfortable. You know, I was never in panic throughout my experience, never scared or, you know, hurt or anything like that. I focused my attention back to my immediate, and I'll look over to the right, on my right, and there's this little blue being. And when I say blue, he's like this neon, electric, beautiful blue. He looks a lot like the grays that you see on TV, big bulbous head, almond-shaped eyes. His aura, his presence, was that of like a professor slash scientist slash shaman, healer, all of this kind of combined. He goes over, and he picks up this box, and he has it in his right hand. He takes his left hand and puts it into the side of the box. And when he brings his hand out of the box, there's this substance free-floating above his hand. It's probably it's almost in a ball shape. It's about the size of maybe a quarter or a silver dollar. It's kind of hard to tell because he was so smaller than me, so probably about the size of a quarter or so. He sits the box down, and he takes his right hand, and now he's only got four digits on his hand. So he takes his hand, and he's kind of got his two middle fingers up, and then his two outer fingers kind of folded in. Almost like you see what, like Buddhist priests or you know, the saints or, you know, Jesus, the pictures of Jesus when he's depicted in art.
Right.
And this substance is, it's blue, just like he is. It has little metal flakes or sparkly things in it. And it's almost like that, kind of that jelly, slimy stuff that the kids play with, you know, because you can almost see through it, but not quite. you know? And so he takes his hand and he does this, you know, peace kind of sign up. And when he does that, this substance starts spinning. And it's just getting faster and faster. And the faster it spins, this the blueness and the sparkly stuff kind of dissipate out of it and kind of free-floating, rotating around it. It starts slowing down. And when it slowed down enough, it had turned into this double-pointed crystal pyramid. Probably 2-3 inches long, not very big around. I remember thinking to him, you know, why are you showing this to me? You know, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, I'm not an engineer. You know, this is important. This is, you know, people need to know this, you know. And then
right.
He told me I would know in time or when it's time. My next memory is I'm in this other room. There's only three walls, two very straight. The other one was kind of concave. Again, the walls very smooth, you know, no rivets, no bolts, very kind of a gunmetal gray, metallic gray. There's this overstuffed leather chair sitting in the middle of the in the middle of the room. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, how out of place it is, and it looks comfortable, but it's not. So I focused my attention back to this wall that's kind of concave. And I kind of walk a little closer to it. You know, I'm probably about 5-6 foot away. And what I thought was this solid metallic, you know, wall was, I could see through it like a window. And that, you know, and it's probably, the wall is probably 8 to 10 foot, you know, tall. It's probably 15 foot long. And I could see through the whole wall, you know, from wall to wall. And I could see stars and planets, and it's like I'm out in the galaxy somewhere.
Wow.
I'm sitting there kind of in awe, and all of a sudden, right outside the wall, I mean, like maybe 3 or 4 foot away from whatever I'm in or whatever I'm on, is this little craft thing that goes, speeds past. And it's not very big. It's probably 3 foot long, 2 foot wide, almost rugby ball or football shaped. It's about 8-10 foot away, you know, past me, and it stops and it comes right back. And it's like right outside the wall, you know, and it's almost like saying, you know, it was a surprise to see me as I was it. You know, it has little lights on it. There's little wires kind of moving around and things kind of metallic things kind of shifting around on it. Lights blinking, and I could feel intelligence coming out of it. And, you know, it sat there for 30, 40 seconds and then shoots off again. And that was the last memory. My next memory is waking up in bed the next morning.
Wow. Now, did Jacqueline also get hypnotized?
No.
No, okay. So she doesn't remember anything that happened to her.
No. I'll kind of let Alta tell what she does remember.
Okay.
Jacqueline knows, like Chad and I, being on that street corner, bored to death, wanting to go home. And then the next thing Jacqueline knows, so again, our guesstimate is around 11, somewhere between 11 and 11:30 is our last, the three of us, collective memory. The next thing Jacqueline knows, as I told you before in the beginning of us sharing with you, she drove her car that morning and parked it up the street from our shop. So we're on the opposite end of the French Quarter from where her car was last known to be. The next thing Jacqueline knows is it's somewhere between 3 and 4 in the morning. She has no memory of those 4 or 5 hours in between at all. It's completely erased. But the next thing she knows is she's now behind the steering wheel of her moving car. It's moving slowly. thank goodness, because, again, it doesn't seem like somebody's trying to hurt us. But anyhow, it's moving slowly, and it hit a parked car and knocked off her rearview mirror, which is what actually jolted her, too.
Huh.
It's also in a whole other section of the city from where she parked the car earlier that day. I'm talking miles away from where she parked it that day. And it's driving. Then she's now driving, you know, as she's come to, into an area of the city that I knew she'd never want to be in at 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, not a particularly nice area of the city. And she actually drives to see, she ends up at a guy's house that she had broken up with, that she'd only dated briefly, shortly prior to us having this encounter, this experience that night. She'd been seeing this young guy named Will, and I called him Dark Boy because he was her opposite. As I said to you, she's very joyous and tall, slender, long blonde hair, happy soul, very pretty. And Will, even as cute as he was her opposite. Long dark hair, and he had a darkness about him. So I always called him Dark Boy. And she only dated him very briefly. I will mention that I find the most amazing about all of this in her case is that when she decided to not see this guy any longer, she invited him over to her house. It was daylight. She had the I like you butt kind of story going on her front porch. She said that he's only just right in front of her face as she's basically breaking up with him. I like you, but let's stay friends. She says that just within a couple inches of her face, he's becoming extremely emotional. And Jacqueline says, and I absolutely believe her, and we do have this in her own writing, she claims that he shape-shifted into a wolf. She said the shock, and I can feel the shock as she relayed this to us, as I felt when I saw that first craft, when I had my head turned sideways immediately because I was not going to deal with what was right in front of my face. This is what she did. She turned her head instantly away, and then she said, I looked back, and he must have shifted very quickly in between. He shifted a second time. And she said when he did it the second time, she called him on it. She said, she used the word, you just turned into, in a very loud, you know, voice, you just turned into an effing wolf. And she says that the shock in his face told her she saw what she saw. She said he looked shocked and said with a shocked voice, you saw that. Knowing, you know, it confirmed to her she saw what she saw. Now, this is the same guy that she ends up back at his house at, you know, this ungodly time in the morning. Somebody she never intended to ever see again is where this car is going.
Huh.
She says that when she gets there, it's, as I said in the past in trying to describe her version of this, she says that, you know, it's like a creepy movie. It's the perfect setting, you know, bad neighborhood of New Orleans, and it's whatever, 4 or so in the morning, and he lives in an old house, I think, that's been converted into apartments, and it normally has a locked, huge gate around it, big iron gate. Well, of course, like an old bad movie, not this night or this morning, that gate's wide open. She says she parks the car, gets out of the car, goes up the steps, gets up on his porch, and she claims that he's sitting right inside the door, I guess, you know, either the door's wide open or a screen door, and he's sitting under a light playing guitar. She claims that, you know, she's very confused what she's doing there, and she says that he stops playing and looks up at her and says, either we've been waiting for you or I've been waiting for you. She claims that she then became a controlled hysteria, which is so interesting for Jacqueline because Chad and I never saw Jacqueline in any ever hysteria kind of personality, but she claims that she just started crying uncontrollably. She says that he led her into a room and laid her down, and She says that she cried herself to sleep. It had to have only been, you know, a short time, because she said she opens up her eyes and realizes where she's at. She's completely dressed, so it appears he hasn't tried anything or what have you. And she said,
right.
I got the F out of there and I didn't look back. Now, just to tie that up in a little bow for you, a few years later, it was this happened to us in 97. In the year 2000, Chad and I had left New Orleans. We had a huge, you know, further adventure, if you will, back in the Southwest where we went to. A whole lot happened to us there. And then by 2000, we returned to New Orleans. On this particular day, I'm walking through the quarter. It's a beautiful afternoon, lots of people on the streets, which is what's normal. I happened to see an old friend that I had not seen in a very long time, an artist friend, a guy friend. And, you know, we get each other's attention. We go sit down at a little outdoor cafe and, you know, got a drink, and we were just going to play catch up. While we're visiting, this guy is originally from Montauk, you know, transplanted to New Orleans. And so I always thought that had been interesting anyhow. He seemed as strange could be, and, you know, but we just chalked it up to him being an artist. He says that as we get to visiting a little bit and trying to play catch up on what's been going on in our lives, he then out of nowhere, I mean, this came out of nowhere, like left field, he said, "Did you hear about Will?" And I'm like, "Will? You talking about Dark Boy?" It was like I was shocked he even knew him. I mean, this came out of nowhere, this conversation. And I'm like, "How do you know him?" And I don't even remember how he responded, but what he said to me, I will never forget. He says, "Yeah," he says, "Will went around telling everybody he had to get out of New Orleans because the aliens were after him." I'm like, I mean, my mouth was hanging open. It was like, oh, you know, where's the camera? This is like just a really bad movie. I mean, this is a whole thing, right? So, you know, that's Jacqueline's experience, and she has accepted it. She then went on in a very short time after her evening with us of this high strangeness. It was within literally just a couple of months of that, she's pregnant. And she now has this amazing son who's now, what, 18, I guess, or something of that nature, that, you know, it's just this amazing child. And I've always thought there was so much more to that picture than met the eye. But she's gone on to create an amazing life for herself and her son. And, you know, she went on to college after this encounter, this experience, and got her degree in environmental sciences. You know, she really is very earth-based kind of human being, not somebody who goes to the wall.
Okay. Now, did you ever find out anything about the implant in your arm?
So I have tried with everything I can to get help and to find out whatever, and to no avail, I might add, and I still have it. I call them unknowns. I've never even used the language of implant because I have no memory of it being implanted. As I've often said, you know, for all I know, it was hatched with me. Maybe it came with the package. You know, I just don't know. I only know that it was standing out in my arm like a big lump, you know, the morning that I came to after that night of missing time. I will tell you, though, that the first go-round with x-rays was mind-blowing. I went to a medical doctor, Chad and I both, a little small UFO group, a MUFON group, arranged for this doctor to see me, knowing that, you know, we'd had this experience. And there's a whole lot to that story, but the short version is that this unknown chose to not take an x-ray the first two times. Now, there's no mistaking, I've got a lump in my arm. You can feel it. You can see it. It does move. It will move and bury itself all the way down to the bone. And I'll be the only one that'll know it's in there sometimes. But most of the time, it's just underneath the top layer of skin. And it appears to change shape. And as I said to you, the first two times of trying to get it x-rayed, it refused to take a picture. What would come out was a perfect skeletal picture of my arm and nothing there. Now, the x-ray tech was losing her mind because she knew she could see and touch this in my arm. And so that's worthy of its own story in itself. So that's the first object in my upper arm. To this day, I've never been able to get any help as hard as I have tried. I did have an opportunity to spend quite a bit of time on the phone. This gentleman gave me a lot of time, about an hour conversation, which in this day and age, you know, is such a grace, who happened to be on the team of Dr. Roger Lear, you know, the only noted doctor, if you will, involved in these, what they call implants. This gentleman has these objects as well in his body, and he also happens to be a chemist or a scientist. While he's speaking to me on the phone, he spoke a lot stranger than anything I've ever said, and I've always felt what I've said is sounding just way too bizarre. You know, I can feel a lot of people rolling their eyes, but this gentleman shared a lot of information with me that had me rolling my eyes. And, right. You know, it just gets stranger and stranger. I've had another experience where I was taken out of bed a few years ago and put in our backyard. And I have full memory of that account. And at the very end of that encounter, my wrist, the same arm, the left arm, my wrist exploded in light. It was absolutely beautiful and terrifying to watch a light bulb go off in my wrist at the end of that encounter. And the next morning, I told Chad, I said, I have another object in my wrist. Now, this one in my wrist won't x-ray at all, but it has been detected with an ultrasound machine. So, you know, this is more questions ever than any answers.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, you've had a lot more experiences beyond this, haven't you?
Absolutely.
So I'm thinking, because we're starting to run a little low on time, that maybe we can have you back to talk about the rest of your experiences, because I'm pretty sure they'll fill another show.
That would be amazing. We're okay. Very grateful. Yeah, that would be amazing.
Okay, so let's do that. Let's end that one here with those initial experiences, and we'll have you back in a month or so, and we can get into all the strange experiences you've had since then, which, if I'm not mistaken, includes a black-eyed adult and some other really, like, a Sasquatch-like creature, you said, a lizard monkeys, and some other really weird stuff.
Absolutely.
All right, okay. So let's end that one here, and I thank you for telling your story to everyone. And where can people find you online?
Well, they can find us. I'm on Facebook. It's Chad Dillard. You can find Alta has a website. It's www.readingswithalta.com. And then you can find us on the Unique Rabbit, Shawls and Gifts. And Unique is spelled capital U-NEEK. And that's UniqueRabbit.com.
Okay. And those will also be linked up in the show archive for anyone who wants them, as well as some of the pictures you sent along. And we will have you back in about a month, and we will continue this story.
We're very grateful, and we thank you so much for this.
Yeah, thank you for your time. We enjoy sharing our experiences.
Come in. Do you read me? Do you understand the numbers pouring over your connection? Into perfection. 5, 8, 3. Have you heard the singing soaking into our transmission? 21, 34, 55, 89, 144. Whence came this dream that haunts my mind? Behind a curtain, outside of time. Can you hear the knowledge plays, the whirring of the world? Can you hear the knowledge plays, the whirring of the world? time to be wary. You are getting to the heart of the universe. Venture calls and Tatriot. Chambers number 1597. And counting. And counting. Counting.